Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. Episode number 84. 84 weeks. I feel like it's not even a Stockholm Syndrome. I feel like I'm in Shawshank, and I can't get out.
I was going to say Stockholm Syndrome, you're supposed to start to like it.
Yeah, like
and I don't think that's really happened. I don't think that you're enjoying SmackDown. I don't think that you've gotten to the point where you're like, oh no, this, you know, storyline with the top 10 list is actually really incredible and innovative. No, I don't think anyone is saying that.
You are Sandra, hello.
Hi.
So I feel quite bad to get this off. I'm sorry that last week I seemed to lose my soul, because I had a couple of people say, God bless Sandra, she was trying to provoke conversation and you just didn't have anything. Because I just didn't. Like, I think it's because I feel like, for whatever reason, I may be wrong, I feel like Fastlane is this albatross around my neck. And as soon as Fastlane's done, we can start building to WrestleMania, which should have new things.
Which doesn't really make a lot of sense, though, because Elimination Chamber didn't feel that way. Even if Elimination Chamber was, like, incredibly predictable, and everyone predicted all of the results, and yada, 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 because they're already building to WrestleMania 2, and you just have to kind of, like, get through Elimination Chamber to find out what's going to happen, right? That was, I think,
yeah.
I loved Elimination Chamber. Like, you and David obviously discussed it. It's a Raw show. It wasn't my deal, but...
No, but do you know what? Like, you have to go through this. Tell us about the Chamber.
I really loved the Elimination Chamber. I feel like I liked that show more than a lot of people did, because the predictability of it just didn't bother me. I had already come to terms with Roman Reigns winning the Elimination Chamber, you know, a year ago. And so I knew that that was going to be the result. So I guess maybe that's like the Stockholm Syndrome of it all, right? I'm like, no, Roman Reigns, he's actually a really good wrestler. And I'm totally okay with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, because I am, though.
No, but
I genuinely like Roman Reigns.
It's a compelling story.
It is a compelling story. And I feel like, especially with, you know, the promo that Roman gave on Raw where he called out Brock Lesnar for being elitist and not showing up and all that kind of stuff, they're making it into a compelling story. It's not like last year when it was, it's my yard, but no, it's my yard, though, Undertaker. And that was the entire story of Roman Reigns. No, this year actually feels like it's something compelling and something really cool is coming out of it. And Elimination Chamber, even if the results were predictable, obviously Asuka was going to beat Nia Jax, right? Like, obviously she was. But it didn't bother me because I really liked the match. The men's Elimination Chamber match had Braun Strowman looking like the biggest badass motherfucker in the entire world, and I could not love him more.
Now, the only problem...
The Elimination Chamber had stories in it. What?
The one problem with the Men's Chamber, I think, at the moment... And it's, well, it's hard because sometimes you want to judge something on its own, right? And you kind of want to go, you know, that was great. But if Braun Strowman ends up doing nothing at WrestleMania, then I don't see the point in him killing Roman Reigns after the match. Because you need to, it depends what story you're telling, but it's like watching an episode of a TV show. You could watch, you know, series, like the last episode of series 4 of Dexter was the best episode Dexter ever did. And then beginning of season 5, it got shit. But do you judge that last episode and just what it was? So I agree with you, but I just think if it comes to the bit where Braun Strowman doesn't really do anything, then he's this weird kind of, you know, we're keeping him at
anomaly.
Bay, just in case, like, Roman gets done for steroids or Brock decides to leave.
Right.
He's here. I mean, I mean,
that would be a travesty and I would be raging, but I don't think that it's fair to put that on the Elimination Chamber. I think that as its own thing, I think the Elimination Chamber stands. And this is totally coming from a Braun Strowman fangirl, unapologetically.
No.
I am completely biased. I will admit this freely, you know, like, I am a Braun Strowman fangirl and I love him forever. So getting to see him smash people. And, I mean, he didn't have office furniture to throw in the Elimination Chamber, but he did have pods to throw people through, which is awesome. I mean, even just the look that he gave The Miz when The Miz was circling around and impersonating everyone, and this, like, when Braun just hit the pod and The Miz, like, ran away from him because he was afraid that Braun was going to just break out of the pod and murder him. I don't know. Like, being the biggest Braun Strowman fan in the world, I fucking love the Elimination Chamber because I think he was the absolute star of it. And, I mean, the Women's Elimination Chamber I thought was awesome, too. Like, Alexa retaining makes sense. It, you know, if they're building towards Sasha and Bayley, then it doesn't make sense for one of them to be the champion, right? Like, it made sense that everything was going to be kind of predictable. And that, to me, is the problem with having a pay-per-view between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Because if you're starting the build to WrestleMania, and then you just have this other pay-per-view, nothing can really happen at that pay-per-view, right? Unless your WrestleMania plans get fucked, and then you have it as a contingency plan. Which is kind of what they did, like, you know, when Seth Rollins got injured, or when, you know, when injuries happen and stuff, you can use that February pay-per-view as kind of a contingency plan to say, okay, we need to reshuffle a whole lot of plans here. We can make that happen. But if everything's still kind of going to plan on the road to WrestleMania, then having a February pay-per-view just feels a little bit unnecessary, or a March pay-per-view in the case of SmackDown. And so I feel like Fastlane and Elimination Chamber were faced with the same problems in terms of being inconsequential. I mean, they almost feel like UK pay-per-views in a way, right? Because nothing major can change. But the difference is that Elimination Chamber was still a good show, and it felt like it had stories going into it, whereas Fastlane just feels like nothing. And the TV leading up to it feels like nothing. It just feels like we have to get through this. And that's part of the problem with building pay-per-views around big multi-person matches where, I mean, the Elimination Chamber is a gimmick pay-per-view. Obviously, there are going to be multi-person matches because the Elimination Chamber involves multiple people. But SmackDown had the luxury of not having to do that. We could have had a singles match for the title or something else happen. Or, I mean, maybe even not make it a title match. I don't know. But I think leading to now a six-pack challenge at Fastlane, it's just everyone in that match is just going to fight everyone else ad nauseum for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, and that's all SmackDown has been. And I think that's what's really hurt SmackDown lately. Yeah. That's all I got.
Well, I think that when I was watching the Elimination Chamber live, like, Ollie and I were watching it, and we had zero interest in the Women's Elimination Chamber because it just was like, oh, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville aren't very good for the level of what that match needed to be. Mickie James isn't really doing much character-wise, but to their credit, that match was so much better than I thought it was going to be. And they booked it cleverly. They had the two most green people in first. And, you know, with... who was the other one that was in first? Bailey or Sasha?
Bailey was in first with Sonya.
Sonya. And then Mandy comes in third.
And then Mandy came out, which was actually a good story because then even if Absolution aren't as experienced in ring, you have Sonya and Mandy working together against underdog babyface Bailey, who was getting cheered because she was acting like underdog babyface Bailey and not stupid child underdog babyface Bailey who can't fight back for herself and who can't be effective in any scenario ever, like most of main roster Bailey has been. She was being fucking badass. Ass underdog babyface Bailey, where she was like, no, I am going to stand up for myself and I am going to fight and I am an experienced wrestler and I have come into my own again. And that's one of the things about the Women's Elimination Chamber that I liked the most was seeing that side of Bailey again. You know, having an edge to you doesn't mean being a dickhead. And I think that's something that the main roster doesn't understand. Babyfaces don't have to be dickheads. Like, they can be good people with fire to them, right? And that's when Bailey is at her best, is when she's being the hero that we all want her to be, but she is also standing up for herself and not taking anybody's shit.
Yeah, I mean, I even tweeted out about it during the show that to me, she felt like the star for the first time in almost a year, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Because, no, I agree.
And it also, you know, I said it on the Chamber review, but, you know, biggest props in the world to Alexa Bliss's promo, which even had me going. I was like, is she called babyface? And then she, in the last second, turned it around and...
I figured that's what she was going to do, but she executed it so perfectly. It was great.
And I actually think that she deserves credit for being the best female character on the main roster in the last 12 months. I think she has that. Because, you know, Asuka's been up for a little while, but, you know, she's not really, you know, she's kind of bubbled a little bit, you know, and whatever. But Alexa, as a character, you can't knock her. She's got it. So the other thing I want to ask you about the Raw stuff before we move on, because I feel like, God, the amount of shit that you have to talk about in this show.
You just feel like you need to let me talk about some good wrestling for a minute before we get into SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Tell me your feelings on all the ways of how they handled the first two appearances of Ronda Rousey with Stephanie McMahon, Triple H, Kurt Angle. The whole thing, there was a bit of kind of, you know, people were a bit worried going in that Kurt Angle was going to be the partner because people maybe wanted to be Braun, or, you know, The Rock would have been a bigger deal because he would have brought in mainstream attention, all that kind of stuff. But they went with Kurt Angle and they did the Elimination Chamber contract signing and then the Raw angle. What did you make of it all?
So I am not as big a Ronda Rousey fan as you and David seem to be. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I don't like her all that much in terms of like some comments that she's made in the past. She seems like kind of a prick in real life. So seeing Ronda Rousey be such a baby face in the way that she's presented on Raw is a little bit difficult for me. And I know a lot of people have been saying, oh, well, you need to give her a chance and blah, 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 blah. But that's part of bringing in an established mainstream star, is if I'm not a huge fan of that established mainstream star in the first place, then you're asking me to, you know, put all of that aside, but you're also asking people who are fans of her to just like her right away because she's an established mainstream star. Like, you can't divorce those things from one another. And so I was very curious to see how they were going to handle Ronda Rousey. And I think her, I mean, her first appearance at the Royal Rumble where she just pointed at the sign and stuff, it was electric for sure. I mean, hearing Bad Reputation, like, I love that song. And Ronda Rousey definitely brings a big atmosphere to whatever she's doing. So I definitely understand why they're bringing her in, and it makes a lot of sense to me. I thought her promo and contract signing at the Elimination Chamber was dire. I thought it was terrible. And by the time it got good, because, I mean, I think David put out a tweet that said it went from, you know, a car crash to awesome in like 5 seconds.
Oh, it did.
And it did. But by the time it got good, I was already so tuned out and checked out of the whole situation that it was hard for me to get pulled back into it. And I think, again, that comes to my not being the biggest fan of Ronda Rousey in the first place. I don't love that Kurt Angle is going to be her partner because I just don't think it's going to be as good. And it might be, I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing because it keeps someone else out of the mix. Like, if it would have been Braun, that would have been cool, but it seems like maybe they're saving him for something else. And again, the mystery of what Braun Strowman is doing at WrestleMania does weigh on my mind, because I would really like him to be in a featured spot because he is the best, and probably one of my very favorite wrestlers right now. But I thought the stuff that they did on Raw actually made her a lot more likable when she just kind of squared up to Stephanie, and Stephanie just being an utter prick about everything help. You're right about that.
Can I stop you one sec? So see the Elimination Chamber stuff. I mean, I think I know, but why was it so dire for you? Like, what was her, because
it was so long and meandering, and they were just talking forever, and it just seemed so contrived. I think Kurt Angle's lines, where he was, you know, saying, oh, didn't you say this about Ronda backstage? I think the whole angle to me just, pun not intended, why is that his last name? It's just so difficult to discuss him in wrestling. But I think the whole angle to me just felt so contrived. Like, this isn't a good story. You know, Stephanie and Triple H are like, we're welcoming Ronda Rousey and this is amazing. And the whole thing is predicated on something they may or may not have said backstage and earshot of Kurt Angle. Like, and some of the best wrestling stories start with something stupid like that. I mean, how many people remember that R-Truth's heel turn with Little Jimmy and all of that kind of stuff started because he didn't like John Morrison didn't like him smoking, right? Which,
you could have offered me $1 million and I would never been able to tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a thing. And R-Truth came down to the ring with a cigarette one time. And that, you know, started, I love the whole Little Jimmy crazy mental era of R-Truth when he was a heel. Once he turned babyface and was like high-fiving Little Jimmy, it wasn't as good. But yeah, that all started because John Morrison didn't like that R-Truth smoked. So, you know, you can start wrestling angles in a really, really stupid way and have them still grow into something fantastic. And I think that's what I saw on Raw was the tension and the interpersonal drama between Ronda Rousey and Stephanie McMahon is heating up. And so I think the story can still work. It's just it all just being predicated on like senile old man Kurt Angle not being able to remember his lines properly, and then Ronda Rousey being terrible and looking like a deer in the headlights on the microphone. And I mean, I guess that makes her come across as kind of likable because she's shy and doesn't want any perks, but I have a problem, and we'll get into this on SmackDown, Kenny. I have a problem with someone coming into a company and saying, you know, I don't want any perks, I don't want any special treatment, but I do need a WrestleMania match, though. That's a perk. That is special treatment. So
I mean, the problem with Ronda is that she's not comfortable enough yet that she can allow a chant to happen, or know when to stop, or know when to start, which is, you know, you're going to
have to... And that's no fault of her own. I mean, she's never been in this environment before.
But all of her promos
and stuff have all been, like, fight-based, and it's always just been squaring up to people. I mean, she was never known for being a great promo.
No, but I think that they definitely, like, they figured out what was wrong on night one and corrected it on night two, I think.
Yeah, and that's something that I'll definitely give them credit for, because I think Ronda Rousey did come across as likable and badass on Raw. And so, I mean, the story works for me in that way. I mean, Kurt Angle just seems like an odd choice. I don't know why it's Kurt Angle versus Stephanie McMahon all the time.
I think the angle's meant to be, because originally they were going to do Kurt and Triple H initially, and then obviously they decided that wasn't the way to go. And then obviously they were going to go with Braun and Triple H at WrestleMania, and then, because a lot of stuff's moved here, which is quite interesting. And yes, we're talking about other things before we talk about this shit show.
We'll get to SmackDown.
We will get to it. Fuck it. We did a long show as well. Fuck off. So the interesting...
You and David went 2 hours, 48 minutes. I never want to hear shit about me not being able to rein it in ever again, Kenneth McIntosh.
Did you listen to all 2 hours and 48 minutes and cackle throughout?
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic.
Well, there you go.
especially your impression of me. That was my favorite.
But the thing that was interesting about Monday was when we were doing it, or Tuesday was... I think it really tells you how good that show was that we needed to go that long to cover everything. Because usually when we do the Raw Rundown, you know, there's a whole kind of 20, 30 minutes of us just chatting shite, and then we, you know, kind of go through Raw, and people could sometimes say, oh, I always prefer the banter part at the beginning, but I think that the Raw chat was better than the banter in this one. It was just kind of, it needed to happen. There was so much stuff. But,
well, and that was something about the Raw Rundown. When I was listening to it, I kept checking the timestamps just to see how much of it was you going off on banter tangents and how much of it was actual Raw discussion. And I think before Raw started, it was still only about half an hour, 40 minutes, which means that, like, there was a good solid 2 hours of Raw discussion because a lot happened on that show. We are not going to have two solid full hours of discussion about this episode of SmackDown.
No, we may have
not going to happen.
We may have a 90-minute episode here that includes some SmackDown chat, but it's not going to be the focal point. This is the whatever we want to talk about, somebody. But the thing with Ronda was obviously initially she was going to be in the Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen match. They set it up at the Mae Young Classic. Mm-hmm. By having the face-off. So originally, we were going to get Braun and Triple H, we were going to get the Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen, but, you know...
And I'm really glad, by the way, that the Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen is not happening right now, because I think there's still time for that to happen down the road, but Shayna Baszler doing what she's doing in NXT, and you and I are going to record a Yellow Ropes Forever in a little while, and we'll talk about Shayna Baszler. Subscribe on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes to hear that. But... Mm-hmm. What Shayna Baszler is doing right now in NXT is incredible, and I wouldn't want her taken out of that story, because she's so integral to the fabric of NXT right now that I think taking her away from that would hurt her story and would just hurt NXT storytelling overall. So I feel like she has a place. I feel like Ronda Rousey, she's still finding her place on Raw, and her being separate from the rest of the roster is kind of a problem, but at the same time, it leads to more tension and build up, and you could have people on the roster, like when she first interacts with Nia Jax, or when she first interacts with, you know, Asuka or Sasha or whoever, it's going to be really interesting because they've kept her as this separate entity for so long. And then having her at WrestleMania facing Stephanie and Triple H with Kurt Angle, I mean, those are essentially non-player characters most of the time. So she's not even interacting with the regular roster at this point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think that the downfall of Shayna and Ronda is it will hurt Sonya Deville. It is going to. There's just no way around it. And I it does suck, but at the same time, you know, Ronda brings such a big presence. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, but she's basically on the kind of she's now on the posters for like SummerSlam and Survivor Series. You know, mm-hmm. They're promoting her as a main part of it, and they should, because there's an interest, right? There's an interest in what I mean. I said this to David. One of my biggest interest points is what does she do after WrestleMania?
That'll be the real test.
That's what I'm curious about, because at WrestleMania she's pretty much just going to kill Stephanie. That's going to be what they do. I would be amazed if. I mean, what I could see happening is maybe Triple H pedigrees Ronda, and that allows Stephanie to kind of try to do something. But
maybe.
But that's, I mean, I just don't see them, based on what they're doing so far, allowing Stephanie to beat up Ronda Rousey. I just do not see it. But, you know,
the only thing that gives me pause is, remember Stephanie McMahon versus Brie Bella?
True, but I mean, Brie Bella was never
booked. Brie Bella was not Ronda Rousey, and I understand that. But it was still Stephanie McMahon versus a wrestler, and Brie was like the underdog babyface. You know, she was a great character at that point. She was a terrible wrestler. I mean, she never.
I quit!
But I think Brie Bella was actually a very intriguing character at that point. She can't deliver lines to save her life. But the story of her and whatnot trying to face up against Stephanie, I think it was actually a really good story. Like, I'll stand by that.
It was good.
And
then
Stephanie
SummerSlam.
McMahon came out and just like murdered Brie Bella, basically. Which
yeah, that was but
made
but the,
no sense.
The thing about if they do, I know that Jessamyn Duke, who's one of the other Four Horsewomen, I know she's at the Performance Center right now with Shayna and Ronda. So yeah, I think if they want to do the Four Horsewomen thing later on, they could do it and it would pack more of a punch. But I think that WrestleMania, it does sell very well because Ronda and Kurt Angle were both in the Olympics. So it's the Olympians versus the McMahons. It's a good ring
Chad
to it.
Chad Gable is just seething, going, why did I move to this show? Why am I on SmackDown?
And then I think that, you know, you've got that. And the thing is, Angle and Triple H do know what they're doing. They're going to be able to carry the majority of the match. I hope that Angle, because Angle was good in the TLC match, but then he was, the problem was he had a few matches, and by the time he got to Survivor Series, it was bad. Like, it was bad. So, it's going to be kind of...
I'm more worried about Kurt Angle as a character than a wrestler in terms of this particular match, just because he doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
I think the thing is, like, as much as we kind of make fun of some of the stuff, sometimes, I mean, you even look at Mick Foley. Mick Foley couldn't remember lines.
Well, Mick Foley was terrible as GM too. I'm not saying that Mick Foley was any better.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying I think that sometimes when you get older and, you know...
And have had a lot of head trauma?
Yeah, that you maybe just aren't, like, you can do... If it was a case of, like, Kurt Angle had to come out and kind of here's three bullet points, but he's been given a script of what to say. I think people kind of give him, like, I mean, now, for me anyway, like, I kind of like that he's now cookie Kurt Angle. Like, he's just like... Oh, yeah, remember when they did that at WrestleMania 21, 31, whatever? You know, I like that he's just kind of bonkers now. Like, he's just kind of...
I mean, he rolls with it. Senile old man Kurt Angle, if they lean into that and just make him, like, crazy old man Kurt, then it's not like he's even that old. He's not.
No.
But...
I mean, I loved the whole, you know, didn't you say now we've got the bitch? And, like, didn't you say you could take... I liked that stuff because it was bonkers. But I do get that it's hard sometimes to look at.
It felt so contrived to me.
I mean, but... I prefer that than, like, because I don't think Kurt Angle just all of a sudden being the machine makes any sense. Because if he was, then why would he put up with all the shit that he's put up with?
Right.
But, you know, we'll see where the story goes.
That would be a more interesting story, though, is, like, Stephanie has been trying to keep him under her thumb. Because, I mean, if you remember, when Kurt Angle came out at, that was at the Raw after WrestleMania, where he got revealed as the GM, right? We were there. Mm-hmm. And... Stephanie McMahon wasn't around because she got put through a table, so she was off for 6 months, which I loved, by the way, when Roman Reigns called her out on that. Like, where have you been? You just got put through a table. That happens all the time. Like, why have you been gone for this long? But, you know, now if the story can be Kurt is resenting the fact that Stephanie and Triple H are back and doing their old authority shtick and, you know, basically usurping his authority because he's, you know, he's done a good job as GM. In some ways, maybe not so much. I don't know. Like, he does have the Braun Strowman situation, but Braun Strowman is a force of nature, and what are you going to do?
You can't control Braun Strowman. What I like
you
about
can't
it
control
is,
Braun Strowman, what especially like... if you're going to keep putting him around vehicles and office furniture.
He's an anomaly. But the thing I like about the storyline is that it makes sense to me that the Kurt Angle character, who's the GM that's kind of held down, and he has to deal with this bullshit from the McMahons, that they're out there going, Ronda, we love you, and he's going, no, you don't. You were just fucking talking about... Like, I think the story makes sense. And then, you know, Triple H punching him on Monday, to me, made all the sense in the world because Kurt almost ruined their thing that they wanted to have. He almost ruined them getting Ronda Rousey by fucking up and telling her what they really said about her. And, I mean, I did love Kurt's, you know, deer in the headlights look before he got punched.
That picture that's going around online with Kurt just, like, looking up and Triple H about to punch him is so perfect.
But yeah, so yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. The thing is, so the last couple of days have been interesting because in Scotland we have the Beast from the East, Bam Bam Bigelow, has struck from heaven.
Which is so funny because I never think of it as Bam Bam Bigelow because I didn't know he was called that. Is he the one with flames on his head?
Yes, he is.
Okay, right. I always just think of it as that NXT pay-per-view where Finn Balor won the title.
Oh yeah, yeah. So there was the Beast.
Or no, not the NXT one. That was a. Like a house show, right? In Japan, but they had the NXT match on it.
Oh, the special.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beast from the East, yeah.
Yeah.
So we had the Beast from the East in Scotland, and then there's now Storm Emma in England. So, like, I think somebody put in the community, like, they want to put Bam Bam Bigelow and Emma in the Hall of Fame for giving them the rest of the week off work. So it's been, like, crazy. There's, like, 3 feet of snow outside my door. I've not been able to leave the house in 2 days. Well... So I wasn't leaving the house, right? Because I was like, I'm fine. I've got some ready meals and some iron brew. I'm fine. And then my mum called me and she was like, Kenneth, have you been at the shops? And I was like, no, why? And she was like, you need to get your supplies in. You never know. It's going to be, you need to get your stuff. Make sure you get bread, milk and eggs. And I was like, but I don't need anything. And then she panicked me into walking to Tesco. I didn't need anything. I just bought bin bags and iron brew like a mentalist. And I was just going, oh, for fuck's sake, what's this all about? So my mum panicked me into buying something. It's starting to get better. I was finally able to see a friend today, which was good. But I want to just play something for all of you and for Sandra that has just made my week. Now, the only thing I can preface with this is, I want you to Google Glasgow Silverburn, okay? Which is a shopping centre in the south side of Glasgow. Iron Brew, you all know what it is, you've listened to this for too long. Space Raiders are very cheap crisps, or potato chips, whatever you call them in America. They're like 10p or something. So, there is a man, a myth, a genius, whatever you want to call him, called Alex Miller on Facebook, who decided to do a video outside of Silverburn to sort of update people on how things are going midway through the snowstorm, the beast in the east. So I'm going to play Alex Miller here, and then we're going to come back, and Sandra's going to give me her thoughts on Alex and his take on the beast in the east. Are you ready, Sandra?
I am ready, and I haven't seen this yet, ladies and gentlemen. Kenny refused to send it to me before the show, so you will be getting my honest reaction.
Here is my favourite person in Scotland. Here is Alex Miller with his real take on what's happening.
It's a fucking Armageddon New Year. Look at that. This is Silverburn. They wouldn't even know it. Look at that. Saying in Sunny World, it's all fucking frozen here. Absolutely frightening. Honest to God, like, this is Russia. Russia at the Silverburn. Bus depot, bus station, whatever you want to call it. I'm fucking out cold, I can't even talk anymore. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Oh, like, just disaster. It's dreadful, do you know what I mean? This is what people in Siberia want to put up with. Look at the speeds of the motors going by. Fuck me. Yeah. Imagine I'm going to drive like that all the time. Not a soul in sight. Not even a bird in the sky. This is frightening, by the way. By the way, stock up. Do what I've done. 14 Morton Trolls. Two big bowls of Iron Brew. 6 packets of Space Raiders beef. She ran out of pickled onion. That's what's happening. They're starting to run out of Space Raiders and all that. It's fucking dreadful, by the way. It's dire. This is the future. Be safe out there, guys. Look after yourself.
That was the soothing sounds of Alex Miller and what the Beast in the East brought to him. Sandra, any thoughts?
Alex Miller is an absolute legend. This is the future. Stock up, guys.
My favorite.
I mean, I feel like it's that episode of Family Guy where there's, like, Apocalypse and they all go to the Twinkie factory. I feel like that's where Alex Miller is in his mind.
I love these, like, 6 packets of Space Raiders beef. They were out of pickled onion. Like, because the pickled onion shortage is where it all begins to go wrong.
Clearly there is a pickled onion shortage. No, it's just funny to me because, and I understand that this type of weather for you guys is astronomical and you're not prepared for it. So obviously, like, it is a big deal and, you know, people can't get to work and everything's closed and it's really, really crazy in Scotland. But when I'm looking at the pictures of it, I'm just like, yeah, that's just a day in Michigan. Like,
oh yeah, we cannot handle any sort of weather, but I love the idea that he's went to stock up and he's got a couple of bottles of juice, 6 bread rolls.
He does have Iron Brew, which makes me jealous. You know, I actually ordered more Iron Brew from Amazon, and it's in my mailbox currently, and my dear husband has misplaced our mailbox key.
Oh my god, so it's there and you can't get to it?
It's there and I can't get to it, and it is driving me crazy. And I was so hungover the other day, and I was like, all I want is Iron Brew, and it's there, and I can't have it.
Fucking Mr. Sandra, that's why he's the background player. Shit like that.
Right?
Jesus Christ. But that was Alex Miller who cheered me up.
No, Alex Miller and his apocalyptic wasteland. Absolute legend. I just love the way he's... And people aren't seeing the video, obviously, as they're listening to this podcast.
We'll do is,
but it's worth looking up. I think I did see this come across my feed in Scottish Patter, the Facebook page that I follow, because I'm super adopted Scottish. And... like, because this is the kind of thing I do now, but I didn't click on it, and I'm so glad I didn't. I'm so glad that I got to share this experience with you.
What I've done though is I have put the link, the Facebook link for the video, in the description for the episode. So please feel free to click on that and just experience. He's exactly the way you think he would look.
Exactly, and the desperation on his face.
You can't even talk.
So good. So cold. I can't even talk now. I'm not even going to try to do the accent because clearly I can't. So. So
the other reason that we are kind of late doing this episode is that, so obviously we usually do the SmackDown Summary on a Wednesday, and then something happened on Wednesday which kind of made us decide to wait a day, and I feel we should talk about it. So Justin Barrasso, who works for Sports Illustrated, I'm probably butchering his surname, but he put out a tweet on, I think it was late Tuesday night, actually, after the SmackDown show.
Was it late Tuesday night? I'm getting my days mixed up, because it was Wednesday that you were freaking out. I know that you texted me on Tuesday about this, and I hadn't watched SmackDown yet. It was after I got out of work, so it was pretty late.
Yeah, it was late. So this is the tweet that he sent out. He said, breaking. Per WWE sources, Rey Mysterio is backstage working out details tonight at SmackDown for a match at WrestleMania. The rumoured opponent is John Cena. So all of a sudden, you know, this is, you know, they've just done the speech on Raw where Cena's kind of challenged The Undertaker, got the biggest response of the show. And, you know, my gut and a lot of other people's guts were they're not going to tease you with that at this point if they're not delivering it, right? Like, it would be mental.
It would be very stupid. Like, it was the wording of what John Cena said on Raw led me to believe there might still be some doubt, just because when he was like, that match is impossible, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, well, then if it doesn't happen, then he can say, see, I told you it was impossible. But it does seem ridiculous that he would be calling it out this late in the game and then not delivering. Because if they do John Cena versus anyone else, then it's like, but we were supposed to get John Cena Undertaker. Just like last year when it was supposed to be John Cena Undertaker and then it wasn't, right?
Yeah, so because it's kind of, you know, you're teasing people with this thing and then you're not delivering it. You know, I said this with Finn on the Power Slam podcast, and goes up just after this, but you know, if you remember when Stone Cold Steve Austin did the podcast with with Paul Heyman in late 2015, and they did that tease about the Lesnar match at WrestleMania, the street fight, and Vince was raging because he doesn't want to. I mean, he does a lot of stupid shit, but he doesn't want to. I would be amazed if Vince McMahon, no matter what people think of some of his decisions, he is not going to let John Cena go out on Raw 1 month before WrestleMania and challenge The Undertaker if it's not happening. There's just no way. It's too late in the game. If you follow Michelle McCool's Instagram, I do not, but I do go to it when I need to find out my Undertaker gossip.
I usually see when people have posted stuff that she's posted on Twitter, because I don't have Instagram. So
and you don't
I
need
don't
to have it. You don't need to have it. You can just type Instagram Michelle McCool and you can see her page. But she put a video on February the 9th and she did another one on February the 20th about like couples that squat together, stay together or something like that.
And, oh, so they're, like, working out and getting buff and stuff?
Yeah, and he looks... I mean, there's no way a month before WrestleMania he looks the way he looks there if he's not doing it. It's just not going to happen. But this Justin Barrasso guy, you know, does work at Sports Illustrated, so maybe you need to take it... You know, maybe you need to take it seriously. But he also works with WWE. You know, he's one of the journalists that... You know, in fact, kind of weird, kind of like ESPN, Sports Illustrated, Forbes...
Like, where they almost promote WWE storylines?
Yeah, where it's kind of... You know, there's a back scratching thing
is the nicest way that I can say it.
It is the nicest way, but you know, there's a back scratching thing, you know.
Yeah, and for sure TMZ and as well.
Exactly. So it would not surprise me if they wanted the information fed out there, because then on Wednesday Brian Alvarez did the Wrestling Observer live show and he basically laughed at the notion of this being a thing. Mike Johnson also put an article on Wednesday where he said that Rey Mysterio was not at SmackDown at all. He was at the San Diego House show on Monday, but everybody who would have met with him, which I think Triple H is handling it all, he was at Raw, obviously, so they wouldn't have been able to meet.
So I'm trying to remember, in Justin Barrasso's tweet, which I know that you just read, but he didn't say anything about Taker being out, right? He just said that Rey Mysterio's rumored opponent was John Cena?
Yeah, which basically, I mean, that is essentially saying Taker's out, because who else would he be facing? There's no real reason for him to come back at this point in the game, because everybody else is kind of slotted in something.
Right. But I find it interesting that all of this uproar happened over one tweet, and it basically caused like a day of panic, right? Like, I mean, you and I exchanged plenty of messages on Wednesday. It was a day of panic. And
he never said
anything about like Undertaker's condition or didn't report on any sort of injury or anything. It seems like if you're going to break that kind of story, then you should really have more information, like the Undertaker is out for sure. You know, like no one's even talking about the Undertaker and his condition and whatnot. Because when I first saw the tweet, I was like, oh, did he have like a training injury or something? And it seems like that would be something that other people could confirm.
Exactly. And see, he did go on to reply to some people. He said, Justin said, this is wild. I reported the story based on confirmation from three sources I trust within the business and have been reliable. Unfortunately for your narrative, an ex-Wrestling Observer forum poster is not one of my sources. I take a lot of pride in covering the business of pro wrestling, and I would not report any story without proper sourcing and confirmation. I stand by my story, and I'm here to debunk any mysteries, myths, questions if you'd like to ask. I have a lot of respect for Dave, but I stand by my sources. I'm not going to convince you otherwise. I stand by it, and we'll let time be the judge. So that's what he said. But you know,
which is interesting for sure too. Like,
he's standing by it. So,
because you'd think if it was debunked, then he'd be like, "Oh, you know, I got my source wrong or whatever." Like Dave Meltzer has sometimes reported stuff from a source that turned out to be inaccurate, and then he's like, "Oh, well, that's what my source said." You know, and I'm sort of iffy on Dave Meltzer sometimes. I know that you are a big fan of him, and David's a big fan of him, and I have listened to a lot of his stuff, and I think he's generally pretty reputable.
I disagree with a lot of his opinions, but I
disagree with a lot of his opinions and a lot of the way he covers certain stories.
Yeah, but I like about Meltzer is that he's very kind of straight to the point. This is what's supposed to be happening right now. The thing is, some people are never going to like him because they're kind of going to go, well, you know, he's not telling the truth, and it's like, well, he's telling you what his sources are telling him at that point. And 90% of the time, it tends to be what happens. So, and you know, for me, like, you know, me and my friend Jamie and I, we are fascinated by what was going to happen at points. It fascinates me, always has. Well,
sometimes that's the more interesting story, is what was supposed to happen and why didn't it?
Hmm. So I'm always going to be all in for that kind of stuff. So, and I get some people aren't. I listened to a podcast today, actually. Sam Roberts did a podcast with David Bixenspan. And David Bixenspan, they had a debate over wrestling journalism. And it's actually pretty good if you get the time to listen to it.
I might have to listen to that because I find David Bixenspan very interesting.
Yeah, because he's someone who does not really go by the kind of political norms that a lot of journalists go through. Mm-hmm. And he, there's one point where he basically says, like, Sam Roberts is clearly a little bit annoyed that David Bixenspan has said some stuff about him, and he kind of pushes him to say it, and he's like, well, yeah, I think you're terrible in the pre-shows. Like,
and awesome.
And Sam Roberts is like, well, why? And he's like, well, you seem really nervous on TV, you're much better on the podcasts. And he's able to say, and there's not really much Sam Roberts can say, because Sam Roberts, you can't tell someone they're wrong if they don't like something. And then, but then they have this kind of debate where Sam Roberts kind of says that he doesn't think journalism is reporting on things that may happen. I disagree. I think it is part of journalism. It doesn't necessarily need to be the most, you know, provocative or exciting journalism in your eyes. But I think if Dave Meltzer has sources that are telling him plans, then it's no different to reading Empire magazine and reading, you know, Ben Affleck's due to reprise Batman suit. What, he might not reprise Batman. Does that mean that person's not a journalist for reporting what's supposed to happen at that point?
Like, yeah, I mean, that's the same in any sort of industry, right? I mean, there are plenty of film rumors. There are plenty of media rumors. There are plenty of wrestling rumors. There are plenty of, I assume, sports rumors. I don't really do sports.
But you love the sports.
I love the sports. Go sports. If it's cycling, there are cycling rumors all the time.
Oh, my God. Of all the sports. Was cricket busy this week?
We don't really have cricket here.
Lucky you, it's shite. So the debate's quite interesting. But what kind of fascinates me about Justin Barrasso is that this is, I mean, I've heard of the guy before. Have you heard his name?
I've heard his name in the sense that he's been quoted on things. I think he's just written articles that I've read about certain things. He's not someone that I know well or anything. It's not someone that I would say is a major wrestling reporter, I guess.
But at the same, you know, this to me is his big, this is his big moment, right? This is his
it
big
It seems like
scoop.
This was trying, this seemed to be him trying to get more in the game.
But to me, I mean, and the thing is, maybe he is right. Maybe down the line it's going to come down that he's right. But, you know, Dave Meltzer reported in the Observer newsletter this week, Undertaker, Cena still the plan. The only way that would change is if Taker decided not to do it or got injured. I can't see him just not doing it, because he wouldn't decide that this late in the game.
Well, and that's what I was wondering on Wednesday when we were having these discussions was, you know, did something happen that Justin Barrasso knows about that no one else knows about yet? Like, is it that Meltzer and Mike Johnson and Brian Alvarez and those people haven't been clued in yet? But it seems like if Undertaker's injured and if he's out and if he's not going to be a part of WrestleMania, then it seems like probably other sources would be able to confirm that. I don't know.
And then, you know,
because I'm not in, I don't know, like, I'm not in that world. I don't know who knows what or what rumors are going on backstage.
And then, you know, Justin had said that Rey Mysterio was backstage, but he wasn't backstage. I think Rey Mysterio is coming in. It's not a secret. you know, if he's meeting with Triple H and Triple H wants to sign him, then he's going to come in. But
because he was meeting with him at a live event, right, on Monday?
No. So Justin Barrasso said that Rey Mysterio was meeting with Triple H backstage at SmackDown, which was not true.
Okay, right.
Rey Mysterio was not at SmackDown. He was at the SmackDown house show on Monday night in San Diego, but everybody else was at Raw in Anaheim.
Okay.
So he couldn't have met with anybody. But the thing that kind of, you know, we'll talk about John Cena in a second when we get into SmackDown, but I mean, John Cena's kind of now going to be taken up with this Fastlane thing. So the earliest that we're going to see Undertaker is, you know, the night after or the SmackDown after, one of the two. So there's still going to be another kind of 9 days of people, I guess, wondering what's going to happen. But something that's... I know that you're not the biggest Undertaker fan. We've gone over this 100 times. But what's interesting to me as an Undertaker fan is that so many people are... They are very attached to the idea of the gloves and the hat in the ring. Very attached to that. And they don't want him to come back because of that. But the more I think about it and the more I look back, the story was crap last year. It was like I said it with David, and I think it's the best way to describe it. It's kind of like going for a 3-course meal and someone brings you soup and then they're like, that's it. You go,
I mean, if that soup was made of grass and it was all about being your yard, then yeah, that's exactly how it is.
I don't know why the story
was terrible. It was really terrible. And it could have been something really cool because it could have been the Undertaker passing the torch to Roman Reigns as like, I was the guy and now you're going to be the guy. I mean, that seems to also sort of negate the entire John Cena situation for a decade because the Undertaker has never... The Undertaker's never been, like, the top guy, right? He's been one of the most important people in the history of WWF/WWE. And I, you know, not a huge Undertaker fan, like, I'm not going to disparage that. Like, he has been one of the most influential, probably their greatest original creation, and, you know, maintains influence on the business to this day. Obviously, I'm not going to take that away from Undertaker just because I think, like, current Undertaker's straight and has not told a good story since I started watching wrestling in 2010, 2011. That doesn't negate his importance or his value to pro wrestling, especially at WrestleMania. I mean, the Undertaker and WrestleMania are definitely linked. So it could have been a really interesting story with him passing the torch to Roman Reigns, except that they want Roman Reigns to be a different type of person than Undertaker. I mean, do they want him to be a locker room leader? Is that what that was about? I don't know. They didn't actually tell a good story with it. I think the story could have been told with anyone, really. It was just about old man Undertaker not being able to go anymore. And I mean, you and I were there. We saw the match. I don't think it was as terrible as it could have been, but it wasn't great. And Undertaker didn't look great.
It was fine. The thing that I think, you know, so I love Undertaker, you know, all that kind of stuff, but people are clinging to last year and it wasn't very good. So, I mean, are people clinging to last year because, well, last year wasn't good, so don't try it again. But to me, wouldn't you want him, if you've been a fan of his for years, to go out on a high?
Not if the match is going to be terrible, because then it won't be a high. I think it's risky. I think it's risky bringing him back for fans of The Undertaker. And again, for me, I'm not a fan, so I don't really care. I mean, I have a very perfect solution as to how you can tell that story, and you know what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. But I think it is risky to bring back The Undertaker if he's not in decent enough condition to wrestle, if he's going to wrestle like he wrestled last year or the year before, because that Hell in a Cell match with Shane McMahon was dire, right? Like, that was terrible.
Well, the problem with that is that he tried to have a competitive 30-minute wrestling match, which nobody believed.
No, so, and it was awful. And Undertaker looked like he was stumbling around and he looked like an old man Undertaker. And that is why I think the only story you can tell this year, if you want to do John Cena versus The Undertaker, which seems to still be the plan at this point, is that you have to have old man Undertaker who's like, you know what? This is my last go. And it needs to be his last go. And he needs to come back on a motorcycle, not just because Biker Taker is my favorite, but because it fits the story, right? And I don't want his hair dyed, and I don't want him wearing makeup. And I know that you and Ollie and I love to critique his makeup at every WrestleMania, but I want proper old man Undertaker to fight John Cena if it's going to happen.
I mean, the thing is, he did come out at Raw 25 and didn't have the gloves and the hat. So, you know, they are at least sticking to that.
Which I appreciated that detail, but the CM Punk hoodie gear is not like.
Yeah,
but I mean, I want it to be different.
If they are gonna do something different, I'm not convinced they are. But if they do something different, you're not gonna debut at Raw 25 when nothing's planned yet. So, but obviously, did you watch the 24 documentary on WrestleMania Orlando?
I did. Yes.
Now, I thought the way he came across in that was really fascinating because he seemed to know that he's done. at that point.
Oh, he seemed to understand exactly what his deal was. It seemed like, I mean, people have said that, though, about Undertaker, right? That every year he says it's going to be his last one, and then he keeps coming back to, you know, ruin my life.
at least you're not being dramatic about it.
No, of course not. Because I'm sure it's all about me, obviously. But no, it seems like every year he knows that he's not in great condition anymore. He knows that he can't go the way he used to. And it was really interesting to hear him say in the documentary, you know, are people just looking at me as the old man or like the pity case? Or I don't remember what he said. I don't think he said those words, but the implication seemed to be everyone's obviously going to respect him. No one's going to tell The Undertaker, no, you can't wrestle at WrestleMania. But he was kind of like, are the guys in the locker room looking at me as the old man who can't go anymore? And last year, I would say they kind of had a reason to. And I mean, I know that he's had hip surgery. He looks to be in fantastic shape, given Michelle McCool's Instagram. But sometimes being in fantastic shape and looking good isn't enough to carry a match. And so I guess that's my worry, is if he comes back against Cena, which seems, again, to be likely, is it going to be any good or is it not? And if it's not, then they really need to tell the story of John Cena putting Old Man Undertaker down.
Yeah, no, that needs to be. I mean, there was also they didn't put in the scene where he was getting, like, shots in his legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I did.
And it also just makes me worry for him as a guy, right? Like, if it's not going to be healthy for you to do this, then just don't do this. And that's my same thing with Kurt Angle, is like, if you're not in physical condition to wrestle, then maybe you shouldn't do it.
I mean, if we're looking at it like that, yeah, Kurt Angle should not do it. But I think he wants to have one more WrestleMania. He wants to go out on a high. I don't think it's going to make much of a difference if he does it or doesn't do it to his health. You know,
least it's a mixed tag with Kurt Angle. I mean, that's positive. With John Cena and The Undertaker, it's going to be a singles match. And so I guess we'll see how that goes.
And I think that from the way he was in that 24 documentary, and I asked someone who I very much trust about his physical condition, and they did say he did have the hip surgery last year. He feels miles better. And I guess he wants to right the wrong of last year. And I hope that he's made the right decision to do it, because there would be nothing more disappointing than having him come back and have a match that's either the same level as the Roman Reigns one, or because when he had the 2015 SummerSlam match with Brock Lesnar, that was really fun because it was just a fight. And even though he wasn't, even though he wasn't Old Man Undertaker, he was more Old Man Undertaker there than he ever has been the last 7 years. You know,
right?
He sat into the maniacal laugh, and he was getting the shit beaten out of him, and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like they need to tell something like that rather than him trying to go with somebody 25 years younger than him. So, I guess we'll see after Fastlane what he does and how it goes. But this is, before Monday, I was kind of like back and forth on the Taker-Cena thing. And then when Cena did that promo, I realised I do want to see it. And I like the idea of it. And the fans love the idea of it. So, I just hope that he knows what he's doing.
I'm still undecided about wanting to see it, because it's going to depend on what kind of story they tell. And right now, I have major problems with the John Cena story, which
leads us nicely
into SmackDown.
So I wanted to have all that stuff covered before we talk about SmackDown. Just out of curiosity, if they didn't do John Cena Undertaker and they did John Cena Rey Mysterio, is that something you're interested in?
No, not at this point. I mean, what's the story there? Valiant Babyface comes back to face...
It makes no sense for the whole. It makes no sense for the whole, because to give John Cena some credit, I don't think the story that they're telling with him is very believable. But I think he has performed it up until SmackDown.
Oh, if I had started watching wrestling 1 month ago, I would absolutely believe John Cena. I would absolutely believe this story. The problem is that I did not start watching wrestling 1 month ago. I started watching wrestling 7-8 years ago, and I am familiar with the character of John Cena, and I know how full of shit he is.
Yeah, so you know, you're trusting...
If I had started watching wrestling 1 month ago and still knew the inner workings of wrestling, I could still point out some problems with this whole John Cena story, and we will get into that.
Well, the whole story, you know, is supposed to be that he wants this big WrestleMania match, and he's tried, you know, he failed at the Rumble, he failed at the Chamber, he's going to fail at Fastlane. Don't worry, people, he will fail at Fastlane.
You know, honestly, though, I'm so glad that looming threat of, you know, his title win number 17 surpassing Ric Flair's record, I am so glad that that's on the horizon, because if that weren't, then I would have a lot more fear about Fastlane, because I don't think they're going to have him win his 17th title at Fastlane. And if they do, I will cry. But I... at this point, if The Undertaker is out, and if that's actually a thing that has just been a well-kept secret and more news outlets haven't reported on it or anything like that, then I would be afraid that they would actually have him win the title at Fastlane and have a triple threat at Mania.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to do that because it just doesn't seem like it's on the cards. And I don't think, from what you hear, I don't think he's the sort of person that wants to get into that. Like, I think he wants to do his own story. And you know, he wanted to do the Undertaker match last year. But the story of him, you know, he failed at Rumble, failed at Chamber, failed at Fastlane. The only real thing he can do, especially after Monday, is face the Undertaker. There's nothing else that makes any sense. Rey Mysterio would be the most baffling decision. It would almost be like a, here's an exhibition.
I mean, that's exactly what it would be. It would have to be, here's an exhibition. But what's the story there? Like, hey, remember, like, Rey Mysterio comes back and gets on the mic and says, hey, John Cena, remember that time that there was a tournament for CM Punk's vacant WWE championship and then I won and it was really cool and it was great and I dedicated it to my kids and it was, like, this awesome moment for me and then you came back and just beat me that night? Like, are we going to go back to there? Because that's the only compelling reason that I can think of that Rey Mysterio would ever challenge John Cena. And why didn't he have any words with John Cena between 2011 and 2015 when he left?
Whereas the Undertaker story is actually really easy to tell because the Undertaker doesn't want to end by losing to Roman Reigns. And John Cena, you know, wanted to challenge Undertaker because it's the only big match he can have.
You know what the good Undertaker story would be? Mm-hmm. Like, I've already said he should come back as Old Man Biker Undertaker, right? And yes, this has somewhat to do with the fact that I just like motorcycle entrances. But also, he says, you know, I want him to address the fact that he left his gloves and his hat in the ring. And if he says on the microphone, I left my gloves and my hat in the ring because I feel that those are the things that are most tied with me. And I know I can't be that Undertaker anymore, but I can still be a badass. You know,
that's what we all want. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah, like, I can still be an American badass, and I can still go, and I still have worth to this business. Even if I can't be that Undertaker anymore, even if that part of me is done, I, as a human, still have worth, and I can still come back, and I can still beat you, John Cena.
All in. But I think the thing that's the most kind of worrying about that is, when he came back in 2016, you were even excited about him and Shane because there was stuff with Vince.
For one day, yes, I was.
But, and there was the whole thing, what's Taker going to do? Because Vince has basically said that he's his bitch. And he just did it. And it made no sense. So hopefully they address it. They're taking a lot of care with the John Cena storyline on Raw. That leads me to believe that hopefully it'll be good. But let's get into what John Cena did in SmackDown. So he fails at the Elimination Chamber. He comes out on Raw, challenges The Undertaker for WrestleMania. People go apeshit for it. Then he says the match can't happen, so because he's a free agent, he's going to go to SmackDown, and he's going to try and find his way to WrestleMania through SmackDown. So he comes out...
And this is the crux of my problem with John Cena's story, right? If you're a failure, if you are terrible, and you're a loser, and you might not have a road to WrestleMania... Yeah. Oh, isn't it that you're like, a giant, so I can just go to the other show and I want there? What? How is that believable? Like, how is that the story that you're trying to tell me? The story that they are trying to make me believe they are telling me and the story that they are actually... There is such a disconnect.
Yeah, the story's not great. I will say, I wanted to bring this up. So last week's SmackDown... Let me give you the last 2 weeks, okay? So the last 2 weeks of SmackDown, February 13th episode had 2.449 million viewers. February 20th episode had 2.613 million viewers. And the episode from this week had 2.692 million viewers. So he almost raised the viewers by 100,000. So he is moving the numbers, which is nice, but he comes out and he's, you know, he wants to finish road to WrestleMania. He mentions Nakamura and his guaranteed title match, but then he says, you know, there's a fatal five-way at Fastlane. He wants in, he points to the WrestleMania sign because that's apparently what everybody does now, all the time.
I appreciate shit when people actually call it out, though. Like Alexa Bliss going, oh, boys wanted to know, being like, yeah, we're getting to point at the WrestleMania sign.
Yeah, at least they're bringing it up. So then he...
Oh, it's ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, it's terrible. So he points to the WrestleMania sign. He wants to get in the Fatal 5. Then Shane McMahon comes out. And he comes out, he addresses John Cena. Now, Sandra, I don't even need to ask you this question. I'm going to ask you. What should Shane McMahon have said when John Cena decided to use SmackDown as a sloppy seconds?
Oh, hey, John Cena, who, you know, Daniel Bryan and I drafted to SmackDown. How you doing? Nice to see you back here. So remember when we actually drafted you to SmackDown, but you decided you were too important to SmackDown and wanted to become a free agent? So why are you back looking for sloppy seconds here on SmackDown? Are you considering our show less than you? Is that what's happening? Like, Shane McMahon should be pissed at John Cena. Daniel Bryan should be pissed at John Cena, especially because he's in the family. But no, Shane's like, oh, welcome back, John Cena. You're amazing. What the fuck?
The thing is, they could have done this whole thing, because the thing is, Shane and Brian obviously want John Cena on SmackDown, if they can have him, right? Because it's
obviously, because he is a ratings draw, and obviously he brings attention to SmackDown. He is a big star. John Cena is legitimately a big star, now more than ever. I mean, before I started watching wrestling, I didn't even know who John Cena was, but he is actually, you know, he's on the Today Show a lot, and he's, you know, he's done a lot of cross media appearances and all that kind of stuff. He is legitimately a big star, so it makes sense to want him on SmackDown. My issue is not that it's, I wish that it was like Shane McMahon invited John Cena back to SmackDown, or like Daniel Bryan invited John Cena back to SmackDown. The problem for me is that it's just John Cena being like, oh, well, I failed on Raw, now I'm going to go to SmackDown. And they're just okay with that?
Yeah, for me, that's the problem, because the whole segment could have worked the way it did, but what it needed at the beginning was John Cena to sell and plead his case of why, you know,
of why he even deserves to,
like,
be there.
If I'd won the Royal Rumble, I was going to pick AJ Styles. You know, that something like that, where, you know, my plan was to do that, but I couldn't, and, you know, Nakamura won the Rumble, so I didn't have any choice. I had to go to the Eliminator. You know, do something to tell us why you're at SmackDown and why.
I mean, the thing that shocked me the most is that John Cena didn't interact with Daniel Bryan. He interacted with Shane McMahon. Why wouldn't he be going to his brother-in-law asking for a favor?
Another element of the story. I mean, the whole, I think that the idea of John Cena being a free agent is interesting. The problem is, it's like they've gone, okay, so this free agent thing is really interesting. Let's not do anything with it. And let's just have it be there. And it's like,
Heath Slater was a better free agent than John Cena.
Of course he was. But it strikes me as one of these things where they kind of go, well, you know, I'm not even saying don't have John Cena on both shows. I'm not saying don't have him be a free agent. But just tell a little bit of a story. Because when you do, people get invested and they like it. And it's like, everybody knows that John Cena is not going to win at Fastlane. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that he is having this match with Undertaker. So if you're going to try and tell this different story, at least layer it a little bit. You know, give it a look. Which I do want to ask you, so if it was your choice, right? Because this was a rumor earlier on in the week. Between John Cena being the Fatal 5-Way or John Cena facing Nakamura and giving Nakamura a big win before WrestleMania, is there a match that you would prefer or not?
Not really. Either one is infuriating to me. Because on one hand, John Cena would challenge the winner of the Royal Rumble just because he's John Cena. And I mean, it'd be great for Nakamura to get another win over John Cena, because keep in mind, Nakamura has beaten John Cena in the past, right? Maybe that would be a better story, just because John Cena would be like, hey, I'm looking for retribution for myself, and also you've beaten me before, and I really want to prove that I can beat you, blah, 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 blah. At this point, it seems weird because we don't know what Nakamura is doing at Fastlane. It doesn't seem like he's doing anything. So maybe I would have preferred that if Nakamura was going to win, if John Cena was going to win, then set that entire idea on fire, because no. But him just getting into the title match, it's already pretty crowded. And I guess he does have more legitimacy to be there than Dolph Ziggler or Baron Corbin, because at least he is John Cena, and that still carries some weight, even if he's been one of the worst television characters in the past year. I don't know. Like, I don't like anything that John Cena is doing right now. And I've never been all that anti-John Cena. I've really enjoyed John Cena in the past. You know, I'm not Finley Martin. I'm not someone who's just like, fuck Cena forever. He's the worst. No, like, that's never been my thing. But right now, fuck John Cena forever, because he's breaking storytelling again. And that is one of the main criticisms of John Cena from years and years and years past, because, you know, lol, Cena wins, and lol, Cena gets what he wants, and, you know, John Cena is always just going to come in and be this force of nature, you know, the same way people talk about Roman Reigns right now. But right now, the story is just so infuriating to me, because you can't tell me a story of you being an underdog and not having a chance and wanting an opportunity and still waltzing into wherever you want and getting exactly what you ask for. I mean, that's, you know, we were just talking about, that was kind of my issue with Ronda Rousey, saying that I don't want any special perks, I don't want any special treatment, but I do want on a match at WrestleMania, even though a lot of these people who've been here for years and years are also probably angling for a match at WrestleMania. So, that's the big disconnect for me. It's just John Cena does what John Cena wants to do, it seems like, and that's kind of it. So I don't know which match I prefer. Both of them are equally infuriating. Maybe the title match is better just because it's already so crowded and such a shit fest anyway that I'm not intrigued by the title match. As long as AJ Styles retains, I will be a happy Sandra. So adding one more person isn't that harmful, I guess. But I don't know how that leads to an Undertaker match.
I mean, I guess that if he's in the six-way, he doesn't need to lose, really. And he has been losing too much. I will say that.
He has.
He should never have lost to Elias on Raw. That was a stupid decision. So he is out there with Shane. A Rusev Day chant breaks out. So of course they ignore it. And
remember when Shane was like, "Hey, noted. We love Rusev Day."
I mean, the tough thing for Shane is Shane's not in the creative team, so Shane's like this on-screen performer, and I do feel for him because he's supposed to be this on-screen performer who is, the face of the show. And mm-hmm. then he's not able to do anything about this chant that people... So last time he said
no. Well, no, because, heaven forbid a wrestler gets so over and so popular with the crowd that they want to chant his name and you do nothing with him.
Oh, no, look, I'm with you. I'm just saying I feel bad for Shane that he is kind of going to get the brunt of that because what can he do? If he acknowledges it, it's bad. If he doesn't acknowledge it, it's bad. You know, when he said noted last time, it's kind of put him in a position where he said noted and he's not fucking done anything. So I think they need to address that and sort of take that away from the performers. Brian comes out, interrupts, and then he says that he thinks that him and Shane are on the same page tonight. He told Cena that everyone earns their way into a match, and he's going to give Cena an opportunity, and his opponent's going to be AJ Styles. So, I mean, they are giving him an opportunity to get in the match, which is fine, but it doesn't really negate the idea that he can just walk in and be like, so, I mean, the thing is, but to be fair, the other point of it is, SmackDown's so broken as a story that, I mean, if Dolph Ziggler's in there, then you should put John Cena in there.
Right? Like, that's the problem with SmackDown right now. And also, I mean, yes, they are giving him an opportunity and he is having to earn his way into the match, which I appreciate. I like that they're not just like, oh, okay, John Cena, sure, why wouldn't you be in the match? But they're also doing it in that really lazy thing that WWE does all the time where it's like, okay, well, you have to beat the champion for an opportunity to beat the champion again? Like, I hate how often they go to that well, you know? Like, oh, okay, well, you're going to have a match against this person for their, like, or a person who holds a title so that you have an opportunity to face them again. So you basically have to beat them twice.
It is an infuriating thing because it's so, they go to that well so many times, but...
If it happened every once in a while, it'd be one thing, but it's just so, like, it's one of the major criticisms of WWE that I think holds water.
Yeah, I would agree. So that's the opening segment. That's kind of the John Cena situation. I guess my only other question to you would be, because we're not really people who criticize the show because we want to. It's for criticizing because it is quite bad. If it was up to you, what could they have done in this segment to make it acceptable for you? Or just kind of like a story that you could get into. What did they need to do in this that they did not do?
Honestly, something I didn't even realize until we were having the discussion, if Shane McMahon or Daniel Bryan had invited John Cena to SmackDown, I think that would have made a big difference for me. Because then he would have a reason to be there that wasn't just John Cena walking all over everyone because he's John Cena. And I think that's the major issue I have is, you know, if you're telling me a story about how you don't have a path to WrestleMania and you're this underdog and I'm supposed to believe that, you know, I'm supposed to empathize with John Cena's plight at not being on WrestleMania. So, which, by the way, he wasn't on WrestleMania a few years ago. Remember when he came out and he and The Rock like smushed the Wyatt family and I was pissed and that whole segment? John Cena wasn't scheduled for WrestleMania because he was injured. So the rest of this story is bullshit too because he's like, this is the first time in 15 years that I haven't had a road to... No, it's not!
So that's the John Cena story that we're having to deal with. I mean,
infuriating.
I think it's good he's on Fastlane because it'll make it a little bit more interesting. Like, but I personally, I'd prefer the Nakamura match because I think the idea is that I would prefer him in the Nakamura match given that I think he would lose because I think the idea of those near falls would be incredible. But, you know.
The Nakamura match would probably have been more interesting in terms of the draw of the pay-per-view because him just being the sixth person in this, you know, multi-man clusterfuck is not that exciting.
No. So, But we'll see what happens, I guess. I don't know if Cena's going to be on SmackDown next week to kind of help, whatever, beat Ziggler or something. Anyway,
probably will.
Up next, we get Sami Zayn making his entrance to face Baron Corbin. Kevin Owens is on commentary. When it's funny, this match started, I was like... So I enjoyed parts of the Cena promo, and parts of it was like, oh God, you should put more effort into this. But then as soon as I saw Sami Zayn versus Baron Corbin, I wanted to take my own life. Because I just don't care in any way, shape, or form. I like Sami Zayn. I like Kevin Owens. Their story has fallen off a cliff. And Baron Corbin, I think he's great on Talking Smack, but that doesn't exist anymore. And I love his finisher, but that's not enough. So they have a match, goes about 11 minutes or something. And towards the end, Dolph Ziggler sneaks up from behind Kevin Owens and kicks him in the back of the head, which is great given that, you know, Sasha kicked Paige in the back of the neck and now she can't wrestle again. But,
I mean, but is that really a thing? Like, I mean, obviously it is, but...
But do you really think there's any safe way for a guy to be sitting at a commentary table and to be kicked in the back of the head? Like, how can you...
I mean, that's just like any wrestling move, though. I mean, you don't kick the person hard.
It looked like he kicked him hard.
Maybe he did, but I don't know. Equating it to the Paige situation, I think, is ridiculous. Because Paige had an existing neck injury. She got kicked in a way that obviously hurt her, and it sucks that she can't wrestle anymore.
If you're in a
but
wrestling...
I think that saying that anyone can't kick anyone in the back of the head ever again,
that's not too far. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is if you're sitting at a commentary table, he's not in the match. So how is he... If you're in a match, you know what's coming. You're planning your spots together. I just think it's
right.
a danger.
I mean, my bigger issue with this is Dolph Ziggler coming out and attacking Kevin Owens on commentary for why exactly?
I mean, that goes back to you wanting Dolph Ziggler to go to the sun. But
yes,
you know,
well, he needs to be thrown into the sun. It was funny when he was sneaky Dolph Ziggler. Like, he kicked Kevin Owens in the back of the head and then he went and, like, sat by the apron for a little while like he was hiding. What even are you doing, Dolph Ziggler? People can see you.
He is terrible in every single way.
He is awful. Throw him into the sun forever.
He ends up getting Sami Zayn distracted, and then walks into the end of days. Corbin gets the win. And then after the match, Dolph Ziggler hits Baron Corbin with a zigzag and walks off. And then, just who cares?
It's the same shit we've been dealing with on SmackDown. Like I said, building to this fatal... Well, it's not a fatal five-way anymore. It's a six-pack challenge, I think. Is that
fatal
what they call it?
Fatal six-way.
Fatal six-way, fatal to my soul. Yeah, so building to this match basically is just going to be everybody fights everybody. Somebody gets to stand tall on one week, then another person gets to stand tall the next week. Apparently it was Dolph Ziggler's turn to hit a finishing move on someone else and try to look menacing, but he can't because he's Dolph Ziggler and he's terrible. So whatever, like, it's a clusterfuck. I mean, the main joy of this match, Kenny, was Kevin Owens on commentary because he was incredible. Kevin Owens should be on commentary more often. And that's the thing, too, is that when Shane and Daniel Bryan were backstage bickering during this match, because, of course, we had to cut away from the actual wrestling in the ring to show Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon giving each other meaningful glances and bickering with one another, because that's what SmackDown is. Shane McMahon comes in eating popcorn and is like, why did you put Kevin Owens on commentary? This is a terrible idea. You are supporting him because you put him on commentary. And Daniel Bryan's like, dude, have you heard Kevin Owens on commentary? He's fantastic. Of course I put him on commentary because he is great. Like, he had lines like, you know, if you're looking for your hairline, it's on top of your head, buddy, to Baron Corbin.
He was very good. I do just want to say very quickly about the whole Dolph Ziggler kicking Owens in the back of the head. I'm not saying it's the same as the Paige situation. What I'm saying is I think it's dangerous to do moves like that when people are not going to be able to be fully prepared. I just think it's an unnecessary risk.
But I feel like that's something they could work out beforehand too, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it made me a little bit uncomfortable. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because it's more to your attention at the moment. But it was just for me. But then we get to the backstage and Shane McMahon is talking to Daniel Bryan, says, you know, his boys got what they deserved and Bryan should check on them.
By the way, why is Shane McMahon continuing this thing that he's like, these are your boys, you love Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, because Daniel Bryan continues to use them on the show. He's not even showing preferential treatment toward Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn ever. Daniel Bryan has never once shown preferential treatment toward Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It's always just been Shane McMahon is super obsessed with the idea that he wants them to be fired, but doesn't have the balls to fire them for some reason. Shane McMahon is the worst, is the moral of my story.
So Shane ends up telling him to go check on them, but Brian's like, what? And he's like, I'm just going to go home and see my family. You've got it under control. Shane said that's a great idea. Now, what I want to ask you is, SmackDown in the last 3 months, the ratings have gone up, which indicates that there is interest in this Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan story. So my question to you is, what do you think it is that people like about it? What is the disconnect between... because you obviously are a very, very, very staunch against it. Why do you think people are enjoying it and you're not?
I genuinely don't know. I find that incredibly baffling. I mean, the fact that the SmackDown ratings have gone up in the past 3 months, that's something that I didn't even realize.
Not hugely, by the way. It's like from a 2.3, 2.4 to 2.456 kind of thing. But
I mean, that kills my soul a little bit, because maybe the rest of the world just enjoys really terrible programming and I don't. No, I don't know what there is to be enjoyable about this, unless it's casual viewers who like Shane McMahon, because he has a pretty cracking theme tune, to be fair. And they like chanting yes with Daniel Bryan, and the tension of it is a thing. Like, it was mildly intriguing for maybe a month.
I really enjoyed the Clash of Champions stuff. I thought that was good, but
I don't know. Like, I genuinely hate it so much. Like, every time they're on screen together, I just want to turn it off so badly. I would have stopped watching SmackDown months ago if it were up to me.
Would you rather watch a Shane McMahon Daniel Bryan segment or Dolph Ziggler segment?
Probably Shane and Bryan, because I find it intriguing how zero fucks Bryan gives about this whole thing. I mean, on this episode, he just decided to go home.
Quite right.
Because he was like, I'm so tired of this. I empathize with Daniel Bryan, you know? Like, I still like him as a character quite a bit. I think him making the handicap match for the Royal Rumble was ridiculous and made him less likable to me. But he's sort of come back from that. And if I can see that as him just kind of going against Shane McMahon for a minute and not so much about Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, then that's fine. But you can tell Daniel Bryan just does not care about this. And he is waiting out his time until his contract is up in September and he can go and wrestle.
I mean, they're still pushing the angle pretty hard. So it seems like there is a direction of some sort. I'm fascinated by what it is, because I cannot imagine anything they're going to do with it that's going to be good. But I'm looking forward to it going somewhere, because it's been spinning wheels for months.
It just feels like it's going nowhere, though. I mean, it really does feel like spinning wheels at this point, and it's very frustrating.
Shane McMahon is then backstage speaking to Owens and Zayn. My favorite line from Brandon Stroud on Twitter was, Shane McMahon is gassed eating popcorn. He's the most unhealthy man in America.
Seriously? I actually noticed that. I was like, what is in that popcorn that's making Shane McMahon's face so red?
I mean, Shane goes red very easily, though.
So do I. I understand that, right? Like, I have very pale skin, and if I, like, have a drink or think about the sun, then yeah, my face goes red too, but eating popcorn, like, standing, having a conversation?
Maybe he had a little workout before the popcorn, you know? Maybe the popcorn was after his workout, I don't know. He then tells Owens and Zayn they should chase after Daniel Bryan because Brie never likes it when they're all late for dinner. I did enjoy the catty comment, but the problem's more, shouldn't he be the heel? Because, anyway... got into it so many times. In the arena, Ruby Riott makes an entrance with the Riott Squad, and you know the thing is, obviously none of them have anything in common, and they'd never be friends, but they all have the same t-shirt now, so pals, kill me now, send these three away where I never need to see them again. Go away.
I mean, I don't want them sent away, because I really, really, really love Ruby Riott, and I quite like Sarah Logan. Liv Morgan can take or leave her. But no, it doesn't make that much sense that they're together. I will say, though, that Naomi versus Ruby Riott was interesting to me in the sense of the story that you brought up last week, right? Like, Charlotte has now beaten Ruby Riott's pals, and now Ruby Riott is looking to beat Charlotte's pals because she pinned Becky Lynch last week in the six-woman tag, and now she's looking to pin Naomi, which she does. So that is kind of a more interesting story to build to Fastlane, and yes, I'm grasping at straws because I just want to like something that Ruby Riott is doing because she's one of my favorites because she's super awesome. At least they're trying a little.
Sure. Naomi gets beat by Ruby Riott. We see Carmella backstage on her phone. I forgot Carmella existed, so she's there.
Which was baffling, right? Again, it's one of those, okay, so we'll cut away from the wrestling match that's actually in the ring to just show someone on her phone. Like, I mean, she wasn't doing anything. She was just on her phone, like, answering questions. I think it was a, I don't know, a Q&A or something.
I mean, is...
Yeah. But apparently Carmella and Becky Lynch were having Twitter drama.
I mean, the thing is, so say...
I don't know.
Say Charlotte faces... I mean, we don't know who she's facing at WrestleMania. Is Asuka going to pick her or whatever? But I just...
I hope Asuka picks her. I hope so, so badly. But on Raw, they seem to be just under the assumption that Asuka has picked Alexa, and Asuka hasn't dispelled that notion. So what am I supposed to take from that?
Sandra, Asuka is not picking Alexa. But the thing here is, I can't imagine. So, say you get Asuka and Charlotte, right? Which I assume Asuka would win because she's still got the streak and all that. I mean, Carmella's not going to cash in and beat Asuka, surely to God.
No. I think actually Carmella might be our best chance to tell the story of someone who waits the full year to cash in and then has a deadline.
Yeah, that may be the way to do it.
I think, because I've wanted to see that story told, because it's one of the last remaining Money in the Bank stories that we haven't seen yet, and I think that could actually be really interesting. So I'm almost hoping they go that route with Carmella, because, I mean, this is part of the problem with having Carmella and Baron Corbin be your Money in the Bank winners, is that neither of them are very good. So you don't really want to see them as champion, and theoretically, someone who wins Money in the Bank, you should want to see as champion, but... There are so many better contenders to be champion than Carmella and Baron Corbin, so that's kind of a problem.
Up next, we have, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, Josh Demel?
I don't know.
Josh Demel is approached by Breezango. He told me they were his fashion icons. Fandango corrects him for his pronunciation of Fandango. He's on a new USA Network show.
Which I appreciated that callback, by the way, because remember when he refused to debut until someone said, Fandango.
He's a treasure. There's a new USA Network show about the murder of Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. New Day comes up. Breezango thought the show was about Big E. He rapped. And then Breezango...
I loved Big E pointing to himself and going, that's me. That's me. Throughout this entire thing, he's like, no, Big E. Like, Big E Smalls. Big E is like, I'm Big E.
It was good. And then he did a rap for them, and then Demel reminded them that he wasn't really a detective. Breezango didn't really know what to make of it, and then stared off in deep thought, and New Day congratulated and walked off. It was, in terms of a celebrity promoting a show for USA Network, it was about as harmless as it could go, and it got Breezango on TV, so thumbs up.
It was an ad, and I was glad to see the fashion police. Did you see on the board how they had solved in different ways? Like, they had two solved, or they had X solved for the X-Files one, and they had solved, like, S-A-W-L-V-E-D for the Saw episode screenshot?
I love that they tell their stories through the board.
Yeah, no, the board is amazing. I mean, this ad would have been better with Jimmy Simpson, I'm just saying, because I'm a Jimmy Simpson fan, but, you know.
Up next was probably the best segment on the whole show. The New Day come out with their horrendous graphics on the screen. Big E pours pancakes on people. Xavier said they're looking to get to WrestleMania. Kofi said first they need to take on the Usos, who are, you know, their greatest rivals, push them to the limits. Big E said the rivalry was hotter than his inner thighs in the summer or winter.
Which, I mean, demanding that they spritz him, but he also had covering on his legs, so I'm just not sure how much that was going to do.
Big E is very spontaneous, and it doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes.
That's his charm.
That's true. The Usos come out, they interrupt, and then they have a very, very good back and forth where, you know, the Usos are talking about, you know, they want to be in WrestleMania. 9 years, blood, sweat, and tears, no shot at WrestleMania. They've been sidelined, which is true. They've been in the pre-show every year. At Fastlane, they're going to run through the New Day like they always do. The New Day are stuck in the past. The future is right here in front of them. And then Big E gets very fired up and said that they've spent the last 5 years on top where they belong. They've hosted WrestleMania where the Usos were backstage eating catering. And they aren't there because of their daddies. And they're going to be on... They were on top because they rushed the field at Fastlane. They were going to win the tag titles. And they were about to break out into a fight before Harper and Rowan come out. But before
and
that...
And become the five-time
WWE Tag Team Champions. Before we get
Big
to the
Big E Langston
bro,
still clearly is connected to the number 5, and that makes me so, so happy.
This promo was great between these two. Great.
This was excellent. Especially my favorite part of it, actually, was the Usos pointing out that they used to be like the New Day. You know, they used to be colorful. They used to paint their faces. They used to jump around. They used to want to be happy with everyone, and it didn't get them anywhere. I mean, part of the issue with that is that the New Day have been doing that and were incredibly successful and the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history. But it's interesting, though. Like, it really connects those two teams together. And as much as their final confrontation was supposed to be at Hell in a Cell, I want to see it again.
Yeah. So the part of the... the Bludgeon Brothers come out, and I'm just not feeling it as much. I think the problem is that you've got the New Day and the Usos who have this big storied rivalry, and they're both going at it with all these kind of promos, but you know, the New Day being on top, and they want to stay on top, and then you've got the Usos who've been not granted WrestleMania, and Harper and Rowan, their thing is the kind of smouldering look with the hammers, which is good, but it's just not really that compelling for me. I know you love them, and I don't dislike them in any way, but I feel like for Harper and Rowan, they're not, I need more. I need something else to happen, because I'm a bit bored of the we walk and we grimace thing. Is that a fair assessment?
I guess it's fair, but I really like the idea that it's a slow build, right? Like, we're seeing Kane on Retro Raw right now, and he has been just basically destroying people for months and months and months and months and months.
If Harper and Rowan were coming out and doing that to somebody, you know, if they were even beating up, you know, people who are on the show but don't mean a lot, that'd be fine. But it just, you know, we've got a week till Fastlane, and then we've got, you know, and you kind of want them to get something soon that's going to prop them up a little bit. I'm not saying that they're bad, but it just, I think the New Day and the Usos thing was so good that the Harper and Rowan thing didn't really feel organically part of that story for me.
See, and to me, it's perfect because I love the fact that they've been sort of separate from the tag team division. Everyone else in the tag team division has been interacting, right? Like, even the Fashion Police and New Day have had interactions. And even, like, you know, the Fashion Police faced the Usos at Backlash when I was there, and it was super awesome. But the Bludgeon Brothers have been this entity kind of unto themselves, and they've just recently started interrupting Uso promos or having a little bit of a stare down during entrances. And for them to actually, like, interrupt the Usos and the New Day, like, properly here, I felt like was a progression. It's a very slow progression. And again, like, maybe I'm the worst one to ask because I'm the biggest Bludgeon Brothers fangirl in the world, because Luke Harper is a fine specimen of a human being, and I love Eric Rowan and his vintner tendencies. And I don't know, like, I love the Bludgeon Brothers. I really love what they're doing. So I like the fact that it's slow. I like the fact that we're not getting something right away. It feels like they're building to something and actually progressing that story or that confrontation week by week without just blowing their load right away. And that's something WWE doesn't do very well, right? Like, they tend to give us matches right away. We've already seen Charlotte versus Ruby Riott, for instance. And I think that's something they really should have saved. I think that would make this Fastlane build a lot more interesting, as if it were their first confrontation, but it's not. So I like the fact that it's a slow build, and I like the fact that nothing's probably going to happen until after Fastlane. I think that the Bludgeon Brothers versus the Usos versus the New Day is probably the WrestleMania match, which I know I said before, I prefer that it be a singles match with the Bludgeon Brothers, but this confrontation kind of changed my mind a little bit, because maybe the Bludgeon Brothers just kind of being this really crazy, monstrous entity unto themselves, I don't know, it works for me.
I think the thing for me is that if the rest of SmackDown was cooking with gas, it was, you know, firing on all cylinders, it'd be fine, but it's not. And I think that's what's kind of bothering me. And it's not, you know, I like Harper and Rowan. It is not coming from a place of me disliking them. It's just like, I don't feel like the slow build feels like it's really doing anything, and that's my issue with it. But, you know, there's one more SmackDown to Fastlane. You know, I wouldn't even mind if, like, what I think would actually be a great idea is to have them come out as the New Day and the Usos are about to kind of finish the match and just destroy everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing, you know, we're not going to, they don't need to talk, but they can come out and they can destroy everything and go, no, we want to be the tag team champions.
And maybe they will. You know, that's a possibility.
And that would be good. I would like that. I just want progression because, you know, Gable and Benjamin, they've kind of got some stuff going on. I mean, if it's a four-way tag match, you don't really need all of them to be, you know, really steeped in character development, but it'd be nice if they were. So
it'd be great.
I guess we'll see. Then we got Rusev and Aiden English backstage meeting with Shane McMahon. At least there is continuity, I guess. They complained about not being on SmackDown for the last couple of weeks. Shane didn't give Rusev a match, but he says Aiden English will face Nakamura, which we'll get to in a second. Bobby Roode, who is the most boring wrestling babyface in the world right now, behind Cedric Alexander, faces interviewed by
Renee. You give Cedric a hard time. His match on 205 Live was really, really good.
Come back to me as personality. He cannot emote. He doesn't know how to. He looks like he looks like he's in, like, high school am drama. It's like, look excited, Cedric. It's terrible.
I mean, have you seen early Sasha Banks?
No, and I'm not watching it because I enjoy good Sasha Banks.
Like, early Sasha Banks was the worst at emoting ever, so I'm just saying.
Okay, well, I'll maybe look to go. No, I'm not going to stop liking Sasha Banks because you want me
I'm definitely going to send you a clip of Sasha Banks trying to emote, and it's, I don't know, it's okay. Really funny.
So Bobby Roode's interviewed by Renee Young. She's asked about putting the title on the line against Randy Orton. He's excited because Orton's one of the greatest stars of all time, even though there's a problem with him as of late. And he wondered if the SmackDown top 10 list was that problem. But Orton walked up and said it's the title that he hasn't got his hands on in 16 years, and he would go through him to do it. Props to Randy Orton for, in this segment, being more interesting than Bobby Roode, because Bobby Roode is angry about a list, and Randy Orton wants a title he's not had before. That's more compelling. You've made Randy Orton seem interesting, Bobby Roode. That's how bad you are.
I mean, this whole thing is terrible. I was just upset that the interview wasn't conducted by Jinder Mahal.
Can
because Jinder Mahal seems to be the guardian of the list, so where was he?
And then there's... When's the next list? Doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Randy Orton's hair, though...
Baffling.
Like...
What's going on?
I saw one of my favorite things, and I wish I remembered who tweeted it, but someone was like, is Randy Orton's gimmick now that he just emulates the hair of whoever he's facing? And he had a picture of Bobby Roode's hair kind of slicked back, and then Randy Orton's hair kind of slicked back, and they were like, I'm really glad that didn't take effect until after Bray Wyatt feud.
that's
which just makes me want to see Randy Orton with dreadlocks, because, you know.
It's a good point. At least Orton, there's a story of why he's going after the US title, because otherwise, why would he be going after it? And they should have a good match. I think this is Roode's best chance at getting a good match that will be memorable, if Orton's into it. Which, you know, I guess we'll see.
I mean, we'll see. I'm so bored by the whole thing. I mean, I'm going to pull a U from last week and just be like, this is happening, I guess.
My only hope is that Rusev kind of gets in this towards WrestleMania and beats them all, but I doubt it.
I mean, that would be lovely. That would be absolutely lovely, and he absolutely should be. In something, at least. Like, I don't want him in the Battle Royal.
God, don't. Aiden English sings about LA being a hellhole, and he's the true one artist. He told the crowd that none of them deserve to celebrate Rusev Day. Nakamura comes out. Rusev distracted.
I was impressed by Aiden English writing this song in mere minutes. Because it was applicable to his match that just got made in a backstage segment. So over an ad break, Aiden English clearly wrote and performed this amazing song for us. Tell me he's not the best.
I mean, why Netflix have not signed him up for a special, I don't know.
Just saying.
Aiden English doing former WWF theme tunes. Rusev tries to distract, but of course it just doesn't help. Nakamura hits the Kinshasa for the win. It just made me think, why is Shinsuke Nakamura not facing John Cena and doing something? But no.
I mean, the fact that they have nothing for the winner of the Royal Rumble, as you brought up last week, is very baffling. I was glad to see him on television. I mean, I think something we said last week was it's more effective to see Shinsuke Nakamura kicking people in the face than it is to not see him on television, right?
Well, the problem's
going to
be...
And so we got to see him kick Aiden English in the face, which is good.
But next week they're probably going to put him against Rusev, and everybody loves Rusev, so why put... Doesn't make any sense.
Welcome to SmackDown.
It's all broken. Go home. So it's main event time. Cena came down after the match and pointed to the WrestleMania sign, and Nakamura and him passed each other. So,
which I thought was so interesting, given the fact that the rumor was Nakamura John Cena.
It was a good little kind of teaser, you know, of like, because
it's a tease for if John Cena wins the title at Fastlane, then he would be facing Shinsuke Nakamura. Is Shinsuke Nakamura not in a better position right now than the WWE champion?
Of course he is. AJ Styles has been floundering ever since. The last thing that he did that was good, that was exciting, was when he faced Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
But I did like the Nakamura Cena stare down. If you're going to put Cena in the match, you should tease that he may be facing Nakamura. That'd be a huge match for WrestleMania if they did it. So, you know, it's put it out there. Also, it makes David
have a... And that's something I'll give to them. I like these, like, entrance interruptions for tension. I think they're really interesting. Like, the Bludgeon Brothers have done it multiple weeks in a row. And this whole John Cena Nakamura thing, I think that was pretty cool.
And, you know, it also gives David a heart palpitation, which I'm a fan of. So, you know, good.
He's not allowed to die, though.
He's not allowed to die. Val is under strict instruction to keep him alive. So, John Cena, AJ Styles is the main event. I didn't think this was very good for the first half. It was okay, but it was like, if you watch the first kind of like 10 minutes of this match, it's baffling to think this is the same two guys that had the SummerSlam Royal Rumble matches. for whatever reason.
Well, I mean, this was never meant to be as great a match as any of those, but it was still good.
The second half was good. I liked the second half. I thought the second half picked up a lot.
Yeah, the second half, I think they just took a while to ramp up, which is fine. Like, because you're going to remember a match for its entirety more than you're going to remember, like, the first 10 minutes of something. So, you know, like, it was good. I don't love the John Cena story, and I think that hurt my investment in this match because I think they were doing really good things. Like, I think they are very good at wrestling each other, and that's something I think I said on Twitter. I was like, you know, I hate the John Cena story, but I'm glad that John Cena and AJ Styles are still really good at wrestling each other because at least I got a good match out of it, and I'm looking for any sort of saving grace in SmackDown right now that I can get because goodness knows it's not giving me a lot. But... yeah, I mean, this wasn't my favorite of their matches, by far.
It was the best match that SmackDown's had so far this year.
I'd have to go back, because I'm not super sure.
Are you stumbled between any of the Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin matches we've had?
Obviously, I'm not going to choose any of those. I just don't remember what's happened on SmackDown, because it's been so inconsequential. But I'm sure there have been some good matches.
I think this was the best one.
AJ Styles are always going to be good wrestling each other.
The second half was superb. You know, Cena was hitting the AA, AJ hit the phenomenal forearm for a kick out. There was a bit where Cena hit the AA, and then he was going to go for a second one. AJ grabbed the ropes to get to the outside, and Cena did the AA through the announce table. And then, you know, AJ gets up, Cena's just like baffled, and then Cena tries the AA again, Styles goes for the calf crusher, but Cena rolls through and hits another AA for the win. The positive is that it took a lot to beat AJ Styles. The negative is that the WWE champion had to lose to John Cena for John Cena to get the match against him. But
again, I mean, we talked about that. That's one of my least favorite WWE things that WWE does.
But at least they protected AJ as much as they could in defeat. You know, that's
and the
something.
Story between the two of them has always been that they're so evenly matched, so you don't know who's going to win on any given night, right? Like, it could be AJ Styles, it could be John Cena. And I kind of like that that's continuing, because their matches are always really good, and it's kind of cool to have that drama.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see AJ pin Cena in the match, personally.
Oh, for sure. I think that'd be great.
Because I think that also adds to the story of Cena and Undertaker, because it's like, Cena's questioning himself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it more interesting to have John Cena in the Fastlane match by about 100 times? It is, because there's actually consequences. And, I mean, nobody in their right mind thought that Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Dolph Ziggler, or Baron Corbin would win. But there is part of you that's going to be worried that John Cena would win. And that adds intrigue and it adds drama and all that kind of stuff. I wish the story to set it up had been better, but, you know, it is what it is. And then after the match, Owens and Zayn come down, but before they could do anything, Baron Corbin hits Cena from behind, then Ziggler comes out, hits super kicks to Owens and Zayn, and then he tries to go for AJ Styles, but Cena hits him with an AA to close the show, so it's just everybody battering each other that's in the Fatal 6, but it's chaos, Sandra!
I just wish it were interesting chaos. Like, I like chaos. I like chaos a lot, but when it's just, hey, all these guys are in a match, and they're all gonna hit each other's finishers, or hit their own finishers on other guys, or maybe hit each other's finishers too. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. It's fine. It's the same. It's the same. Like, I just sort of go, okay, SmackDown, you're still being SmackDown. That's awesome.
Where would your thumb be for this episode?
Still thumbs down. Still thumbs down on SmackDown. There were better things this week, for sure, but I don't think it's even worth a thumbs in the middle. Like, the Ruby Riott Charlotte story is becoming a little bit of a story, which I appreciate, but the John Cena stuff, I mean, he opened the show, he closed the show, and that's so infuriating to me that that's a thumbs down automatically, and then just, it's all predicated on Shane and Brian drama that I don't care about. Bobby Roode is the worst. Like, I mean, Dolph Ziggler's the actual worst, obviously, but Bobby Roode is also terrible, and then he's facing Randy Orton, so boo Randy Orton, obviously, is how I'm gonna feel about that. SmackDown's just so nothing right now, and I just want to get past the point of it being nothing. It's very frustrating.
I'm going to shock you, and I'm actually going to put a thumbs in the middle.
Really? Which, isn't it sad that right now a thumbs in the middle seems like high praise for SmackDown?
Well, I'm with you on a lot of stuff that you're saying, but I thought that the Cena-AJ match for the second half was tremendous. It was better than anything that's been on this year. I thought the tag segment was excellent. So for those two things, maybe I'm just feeling like, oh, there was stuff that I liked, yay!
It was marginally better than it's been, that's
true. I do think it deserves some thumbs in the middle. The Corbin-Zayn match wasn't terrible. Rusev's back in the show in some way. Breezango were on it. The tag thing was good. And the main event was good. So yeah, I'll give it a thumbs in the middle to just kind of be fair about it. But it's this weird thing where, like I said at the beginning, Fastly is kind of this albatross that we've got to get through. And then, but I do feel that, you know, then we get to kind of see, because aren't you, even you who does not like looking forward past things, right? Aren't you kind of sitting going, what are all these people doing at WrestleMania? Like, isn't the party just kind of going, I don't understand where it's going.
I mean, a little bit. And I think part of the problem is that I don't trust SmackDown to give me anything good at this point. Last year, when SmackDown was building to WrestleMania, I would have given it a lot more credit because SmackDown was telling compelling stories and SmackDown was being interesting and SmackDown had characters that I cared about. This year, I just am kind of like, all right, so I almost feel like we need to get past WrestleMania as well so that we can get to some sort of shakeup or something interesting happen. Although I don't think that a shakeup is even going to help if creative doesn't change, because it's not the problem with the talent on the show. There is so much talent on SmackDown right now. They're just doing nothing and they've killed interest in all of them. And, you know, that is what is in turn killing my soul and your soul and making us just so incredibly despondent about SmackDown. So I don't know. Like, I do want to just get past Fastlane, but I feel like they're already starting to build toward WrestleMania, and none of the SmackDown stuff seems even close to what Raw is doing.
Yeah, Raw is doing really bad. I think I'm going to be optimistic. I think it will pick up. I think it will pick up. I have one last question for you, if you have time for it.
I have, like, 2 minutes. Okay.
So, yes. 205 Live. This week happened. Roderick Strong beat Kalisto. Tremendous. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a question. It was reported that about a third of the audience left after SmackDown and didn't stay for 205 Live. What is the issue? Is it the time that it's on, or is something else at play?
I think it's the time, and I think it's the reputation of 205 Live, because if you don't watch 205 Live regularly, you haven't realized that 205 Live has become one of the best shows that WWE produces. Like, 205 Live to me is on par with NXT in terms of being great right now. It has been incredible, but I mean, after people watch a SmackDown taping, I'm sure their souls are dead because it's SmackDown. And they're like, I don't want any more wrestling. I just don't want to deal with this, you know, tertiary show that no one cares about. And it sucks because I think if they taped 205 Live before the episode of SmackDown instead of after the episode of SmackDown, I think it would get a lot better response. But I've noticed also watching 205 Live every week that the crowd that actually does stay, even if it's only a third of the crowd, are responding to what's going on in the ring and are responding to the storytelling that the wrestlers are doing. And I think that's a really good sign, because maybe word of mouth will spread that 205 Live is actually incredible, because it is. It's so good right now. And this week wasn't the most exciting just because it wasn't like characters that I'm as invested in, but it, like, Roddy Strong beat Kalisto. That's great, right? And, you know, I like Cedric Alexander. I know you don't, but
terrible.
You know, the match was super good.
I think what I think is a twofold thing. I think the timing is part, but I also think that WWE fans want to build to characters. And I think that given, like, see all the stuff that happens in 205 Live? If that happened when you first get in the arena, I think you'd be super into it.
Like, yeah, I mean, when I go to SmackDown tapings or whatever, like, when they tape main event, everyone's responding to main event. Because yeah, everyone's so like, yeah, wrestling, we're here to see the wrestling.
If you have Mustafa Ali and Jack Gallagher to start the show,
yeah,
you'll be into it. But I think the problem is, don't give everybody all the big stars and then give them 205 Live. It's just, it's the wrong way around. Mm-hmm. And I think people ultimately want stars over athletes. And I think it's better to give the athletes first, because that's what people can build to and then get their stars. And then,
well, because when you first get to an arena, you're really hyped to see a show. So you're really up for anything that's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you get mixed challenge, the mixed match challenge and the dark main event. Too much. Anyway, that is it for us. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Make sure and head to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of content, including Finn Martin's debut article at the $4 level, where he is resuscitating what's going down from the Powerslam days and telling us who he thinks would be in the WWE Hall of Fame. 3,000 words that you can get. Sandra, who's going to play us out this week?
I mean, that's tough because it's SmackDown and I don't care about anyone. So,
do you know who we should play us out?
Who?
I mean, it is his day. Maybe he's not featured on SmackDown, but he's featured here. It's Rusev Day, so let's play Rusev's.
We haven't gotten to play his theme in a long time. Let's play Rusev's theme.
See you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Rusev Udria, Rusev Machka.